If you follow Truckbeat on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, you may have gotten a sneak peek at the truck that will soon put the truck in Truckbeat. More on that later. But in the meantime, for today's episode, we wanted to return to the issue of addiction.
In our last episode, we learned a little bit about the history of addiction in Knoxville's Old City and how it affected the lives of the people who lived and worked there around the early part of the 20th century. And that got us thinking about what people think today when they hear that word, addiction. So our own Liz Wood walked around the UT campus and asked people, in 10 words or less, what comes to your mind when you hear that word, addiction?
Okay, when I think of addiction, I think of it tearing families apart.
Sad.
Bad.
Drugs. Alcohol.
Drugs.
More than just drugs.
Video games.
Sex.
Weird addictions.
Addiction.
Sometimes illness.
To me.
When I think of addiction, I think of...
being trapped.
Uncontrollable.
Something that takes over your life.
That controls your life.
When I think of addiction... I think of someone having a bad habit that they can't break.
No self-control and having no power over your actions.
No self-control.
Loss of control.
In 10 words or less, addiction is bondage.
One of the things we've learned about addiction is that every addiction story is the same, and it's also different. To illustrate that, Jess drove out to Roane County, to Kimberly and David Bell's home, where a painful past and a hopeful future somehow coexist. Here in their small house outside Kingston, the Bells are retrieving their lives from the grip of drug addiction and helping others to do the same.
26-year-old Pim stands at the sink washing the lunch dishes. The house is spotless and bright with natural light. It's a peaceful life she says she couldn't imagine just a few years ago. As a 20-year-old college student, the painkiller addiction she'd been sustaining since high school led her to do things she now regrets.
Still on checks, still on money. At Roane State is when my addiction really took a toll on me, and I got to the point where I wasn't going to class, and I would just lay on the couch like a dead person, and the only actions I would take is to go get drugs. So it was a pretty down life.
Kim's grades suffered as things spiraled out of control. She says by then, she was smoking crack and using heroin and other drugs, along with taking OxyContin.
It's crazy to think where my addiction took me, because to think that I would use dirty needles is horrible. Like, that's just this addiction. That's where it takes you. It takes you to horrible places. You do things you never thought you would do.
Finally, she says, her family made a desperate plea, get help.
So they intervened. At that time, I was just broken, just completely broken, spiritually, physically, emotionally, just broken. So I thought, well, what do I have to lose?
She went to rehab for 90 days.
I learned a lot in there, and the main thing was to find out what that void was inside of me and why I was using drugs to fill up that void and numb those emotions.
It's a pretty typical addiction story, except unlike many addicts, Kim managed to get and stay clean the first time. A few years ago, she went back to college, then nursing school, and then she got her master's degree. Today, she's a nurse practitioner at a clinic in Kingston. She says many people she meets have a hard time believing such a petite, soft-spoken young woman used to be an addict. She says she's learned when it comes to drug addiction, looks can be deceiving.
It doesn't discriminate against person, place, or social status. You know, it doesn't can grab a hold of anybody and take you down. It's, you know, very destructive.
After getting clean, Kim met her husband, David, who's also a recovering addict.
This is David.
They both volunteer at a local 12-step program, and David Bell works with drug-addicted jail inmates in his job as an investigator with the county's public defender's office, too. This is his life now. He says he recognizes an earlier version of himself in the faces of the addicts he deals with at work.
I see myself in everybody, especially when I see bad behaviors. You don't have to live like they're living right now, talking about the addicted. They don't have to. That's a choice they make, and they don't have to do that. They just need the knowledge to know how not to live like that.
David had to learn that the hard way. More than a decade ago, an addiction to OxyContin and Percocet cost him a good job. Without a steady salary, he says he quickly looked elsewhere for money to buy drugs.
Then the hustle began. Took about 2 years after that of hustling, stealing, and acting a fool. If I knew somebody had a couple $100 in their pocket, I'd take their money, whether they give it to me or whether I took it from them. I always started with my parents. I stole them blind, whatever extent it took not to be sick.
David finally got clean in 2007. Now he shares his story with inmates he meets through his job in hopes they'll stop making excuses and choose to change.
They're always the victim till they realize that they're not.
Most addicts, he says, typically run through every excuse in the book to avoid facing their demons and seeking help.
Oh, poor pity me is just an excuse. It just prolongs agony. Eventually the pain will get great enough. They're getting to where they don't care about jails and institutions. So it's either going to come death, or they're going to get sick and tired of being sick and tired. And once they've had enough, they'll give up.
Even now, he says, he still takes life one day at a time. It's a cliche, but it's a central truth of recovery.
It's a lifetime disease. We're going to have it. I'm an addict. If I take a pill, I'm going to want more. If I go drink, I'm going to want to drink more. I'm going to be sick in the morning. I don't want to have a headache and hurt. I don't want it.
That desire to stay healthy motivates him to continue his recovery. He says he and his wife, Kim, are living proof there can be life, even after serious addiction. Kim is 6 months pregnant with their first child. This spring, after the baby comes, they plan to move to a brand new home they're building nearby.
On our next installment of Truck Beat, we'll introduce you to the truck, and we'll examine how one community decided it could no longer ignore its addiction problem. That's on the next episode of Truck Beat.
I'm Jess Mador.
And I'm Matt Schaefer-Powell. Truckbeat on WUOT is brought to you by Finding America, a national initiative of the Association of Independents in Radio, with financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Wincote Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the National Endowment for the Arts, and the WUOT Lauren P. Murphy Endowment Fund.